Penguin Random House Audio presents The Danish Girl by David Ebershoff. Read for you by Jeff Woodman.
Part 1. Copenhagen, 1925. Chapter 1. His wife knew first. "Do me a small favor," Greta called from the bedroom that first afternoon. "Just help me with something for a little bit." "Of course," Einar said, his eyes on the canvas. "Anything at all." The day was cool, the chill blowing in from the Baltic. They were in their apartment in the widow house. Einar, small and not yet 35, painting from memory a winter scene of the Kattegat Sea. The black water was white-capped and cruel, the grave of hundreds of fishermen returning to Copenhagen with their salted catch. The neighbor below was a sailor, a man with a bullet-shaped head who cursed his wife. When Einar painted the gray curl of each wave, he imagined the sailor drowning, a desperate hand raised, his potato vodka voice still calling his wife a port whore. It was how Einar knew just how dark to mix his paints, gray enough to swallow a man like that, to fold over like batter his sinking growl. "I'll be out in a minute," said Greta, younger than her husband and handsome with a wide, flat face. "Then we can start." In this way as well, Einar was different from his wife. He painted the land and the sea, small rectangles lit by June's angled light or dimmed by the dull January sun. Greta painted portraits, often to full scale, of mildly important people with pink lips and shine in the grain of their hair. Herr I. Gluckstadt, the financier behind the Copenhagen Free Harbor. Christian Dahlgaard, furrier to the king. Ivar Knudsen, member of the shipbuilding firm Burmeister & Vane. Today was to have been Anna Fonsmark, the mezzo-soprano from the Royal Danish Opera. Managing directors and industry titans commissioned Greta to paint portraits that hung in offices, above a filing cabinet or along a corridor nicked by a worker's cart. Greta appeared in the doorframe. "You sure you won't mind stopping for a bit to help me out?" she said, her hair pulled back. "I wouldn't have asked if it weren't important. It's just that Anna's canceled again. So, would you mind trying on her stockings?" Greta asked. "And her shoes?" The April sun was behind Greta, filtering through the silk hanging limply in her hand. Through the window, Einar could see the tower of the Rundetarn, like an enormous brick chimney, and above it the Deutscher Aeroloid, puttering out on its daily return to Berlin. "Greta," Einar said, "what do you mean?" An oily bead of paint dropped from his brush to his boot. Edvard IV began to bark, his white head turning from Einar to Greta and back. "Anna's cancelled again," Greta said. "She has an extra rehearsal of Carmen. I need a pair of legs to finish her portrait or I'll never get it done. And then I thought to myself, yours might do." Greta moved toward him, the shoes in her other hand senep yellow with pewter buckles. She was wearing her button-front smock with the patch pockets where she tucked things she didn't want Einar to see. "But I can't wear Anna's shoes," Einar said. Looking at them, Einar imagined that the shoes might, in fact, fit his feet, which were small and arched and padded softly on the heel. His toes were slender, with a few fine black hairs. He imagined the wrinkled roll of the stocking gliding over the white bone of his ankle, over the small cushion of his calf, clicking into the hook of a garter. Einar had to shut his eyes. The shoes were like the ones they had seen the previous week in the window of Fonnesbeck's department store, displayed on a mannequin in a midnight blue dress. Einar and Greta had stopped to admire the window, which was trimmed with a garland of jonquils. Greta said, "Pretty, yes?" When he didn't respond, his reflection wide-eyed in the plate glass, Greta had tried to pull him away from Fonnesbeck's window. She tugged him down the street, past the pipe shop, saying, "Einar, are you all right?" The front room of the apartment served as their studio. Its ceiling was ribbed with thin beams and vaulted like an upside-down dory. Sea mist had warped the dormer windows, and the floor tilted imperceptibly to the west. In the afternoon, when the sun beat against the widow house, a faint smell of herring would seep from its walls. In winter, the skylights would leak, a cold drizzle bubbling the paint on the wall. Einar and Greta stood their easels beneath the twin skylights, next to the boxes of oil paint, ordered from Herr Salathoff in Munich, and the racks of blank canvases. When Einar and Greta weren't painting, they protected everything beneath green tarps the sailor below had abandoned on the landing.
"Why do you want me to wear her shoes?" Einar asked.
He sat in the rope-bottom chair that had come from the back shed of his grandmother's farm. Edvard IV jumped into his lap. The dog was trembling from the yelling of the sailor below.
"For my painting of Anna," Greta said, and then, "I'd do it for you."
On the point of her cheek was a single shallow chickenpox scar. Her finger was brushing it gently, something she did, Einar knew, when she was anxious. Greta knelt to unlace Einar's boots. Her hair was long and yellow, more Danish in color than his. She would push it behind her ears whenever she wanted to get busy on something new. Now it was slipping over her face as she picked at the knot in Einar's laces. She smelled of orange oil, which her mother shipped over once a year in a case of brown bottles labeled Pure Pasadena Extract. Her mother thought Greta was baking tea cakes with the oil, but instead Greta used it to dab behind her ears. Greta began to wash Einar's feet in the basin. She was gentle but efficient, quickly pulling the sea sponge between his toes. Einar rolled up his trousers even further. His calves looked, he suddenly thought, shapely. He delicately pointed his foot, and Edvard IV moved to lick the water from his little toe, the one that was hammer-headed and born without a nail.
"We'll keep this our secret, Greta," Einar whispered. "You won't tell anyone, will you?"
He was both frightened and excited, and the child's fist of his heart was beating in his throat. "Who would I tell?"
"Anna."
"Anna doesn't need to know," Greta said. Even so, Anna was an opera singer, Einar thought. She was used to men dressing in women's clothes. And women in men's, the Husenrolle. It was the oldest deceit in the world, and on the opera stage it meant nothing at all, nothing but confusion. A confusion that was always resolved in the final act.
"Nobody needs to know anything," Greta said, and Einar, who felt as if a white stage light were upon him, began to relax and work the stocking up his calf.
"You're putting it on backwards," Greta said, righting the seam. "Pull gently." The second stocking ripped.
"Do you have another?" Einar asked.
Greta's face froze, as if she was just realizing something. Then she went to a drawer in the pickled ash wardrobe. The wardrobe had a closet on top with an oval mirror in its door and three drawers with brass hoop handles. The top one Greta locked with a little key.
"These are heavier," Greta said, handing Einar a second pair.
Folded neatly into a square, the stockings looked to Einar like a patch of flesh. A patch of Greta's skin, brown from a summer holiday in Menton.
"Please be careful," she said. "I was going to wear them tomorrow."
The part through Greta's hair revealed a strip of silvery white flesh, and Einar began to wonder what she was thinking beneath it. With her eyes slanted up and her mouth pinched, she seemed intent on something. Einar felt incapable of asking. He felt nearly bound, with an old paint rag tied across his mouth. And so he wondered about his wife silently, with a touch of resentment ripening beneath his face, which was pale and smooth and quite like the skin of a white peach.
"Aren't you a pretty man?" she had said years ago when they were first alone.
Greta must have noticed his discomfort, because she reached out and held Einar's cheeks and said,
"It means nothing."
and then...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?